Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I'm here with Jeffrey Waddington. Today we want to speak about several books, but the first we want to mention is Reformed Dogmatics. The hardcover edition is now out, published recently here, just at the end of 2014. It's written by Gerhardus Voss. It's the lead translator and editor. Is Richard B. Gaffin, Jr. Tell us about this series, Jeff.
Sure. The first two of five volumes are now available. You can find those on Amazon. I'm guessing they're Lightning Press, but I don't know that for a fact. They're beautiful editions.
Lexham.
Yeah, Lexham Press.
Yeah.
Which is the publishing arm of Logos,
mm-hmm.
which is now a subsidiary of, is it Life Faith or Faith Life?
Faith Life, I think. Yeah.
Faith Life. They're beautiful, done well, and they're in a catechetical format. Now, that has nothing to do with the particular publisher. That's just the way that Voss did his Reformed Dogmatics. So it's a question and answer format. And some of them are short answers, and some of them are some of the questions have very long answers. The first volume is Theology Proper, that is God in himself. And then the second volume is Anthropology. So those are out. This is a wonderful addition to our understanding of Voss's work because it shows that biblical theology and systematic theology are not at odds with one another when properly conceived. Again, there's three more volumes that will come out. I don't know the timetable at this point. But I've been reading the electronic edition, which has been available in Logos for some time now, and have been enjoying it very much because Voss gets into some detail about various questions he wrestles with. Very much worth your while. Years ago, I held in my hand what I believe would be his handwritten edition in Dutch. And I remember Grace Mullen saying, "Jeff, why don't you translate?" And I'm going, right, okay. She knew I was doing Dutch as one of my languages for my PhD, but here I was looking at blue ink, handwritten on a page. This was not the mimeograph typed script that the books were actually based on. And, of course, not only was it Dutch, it was Dutch prior to the end of World War II. And if you know anything about the Dutch language, you know that there was I don't know if I would call it a thorough overhaul, but there appears to have been a reaction to the German takeover of the Netherlands. And so the language removed some of the Germanic elements. The people removed some of the Germanic elements of the Dutch language. Now, I could be very wrong on that, but that's what it looks like. And so in addition to that, you also had the Dr. Voss did a lot of contractions, you know, shorthand.
Yes.
So translating, you'd have to be able to read his handwriting, know Dutch, and know his particular system of contractions.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, well, maybe someone else can tackle this, and someone else has, thankfully. So a lot of it will be, you know, very similar to Bavinck, although I believe the first and second volume, or these volumes were produced about the same time or before the Reformed Dogmatics were published. So whatever similarity one sees in them. Are in fact because they're both Dutch Reformed theologians, right? So drawing upon the same tradition.
They're like-minded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very, very like-minded. And they, those who are familiar with Voss will know that he regularly corresponded with Bavinck and Kuyper. And before arriving at Princeton, I believe he corresponded with Warfield and then became very close friends with Warfield when he was appointed to the faculty at Old Princeton. So those volumes are out. Just keep an eye on through Amazon or through the Lexham Press for the future volumes. This will be a wonderful addition to our theological knowledge. Also wanted to note that it's interesting, the books on Jonathan Edwards that never come to an end. There's always, Solomon said to the writing of books, or there is no end. To the publishing of Edwards books, there's no end. I have two books in my hand now, plus a third one on the way. First one is called Finding God in Solitude, The Personal Piety of Jonathan Edwards and Its Influence on His Pastoral Ministry. And this is part of the American University Studies series. And it is by Donald Whitney. You may recognize that name. He's a professor at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. So far, very interesting. And then another volume published by Oxford University Press, which is called Jonathan Edwards and the Psalms, A Redemptive Historical Vision of Scripture, which is the text itself, apart from the bibliography, takes you 389 pages. And that's by David Barshinger. And I need to tell you, it's a small world, because David Barshinger's cousin is a licentiate of the Presbytery of New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's a very small world. And then the third book on Edwards, which is due out next month, is called Jonathan Edwards and the Life of God, Toward an Evangelical Theology of Participation.
Really?
By R. Ross Hastings, and that's going to be a Fortress publication, Fortress Press. And that's another substantial book, almost 450 pages. So those are the never-ending supply of Edwards volumes, and I'm sure there are others that I haven't seen yet. Those volumes will keep you busy, and those are in ebook format as well as print editions. But the two books I also wanted to mention with a little more time would be one, A Treatise on True Theology, by Franciscus Junius, Junius. And this is really one of the major texts from the post-Reformation Reform Scholastic era. It's translated by David Noe, who is a ruling elder in the OPC. He's a professor of classics associate professor of classics at Calvin College. It's a wonderful book. This is the book that is referenced frequently in Richard Muller's Post-Reformation Reform Dogmatic series. Junius was actually a French Reformed theologian who taught at the University of Leiden. And this book includes a biography of Junius. So if you know nothing about him, there is both an introduction by Willem van Asselt, of course, he was, before he passed away, a major Reformation or post-Reformation Reformed scholastic scholar in the Netherlands. He provides a very helpful introduction. And then there's the life of Franciscus Junius, which is actually written, I think, during the time of Junius himself, and he contributed to the writing of that. And then there is the Treatise on True Theology. Just to give you a summary of that, Reformed scholasticism understood, or is predicated upon, a distinction which I believe is first formulated by Junius, but then once it's formulated by him, it enters into the bloodstream of post-Reformation Reformed dogmatics and becomes common, and that is the archetype-ectype distinction.
Oh, very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is first formulated by Junius in this particular book, which was just published by Reformation Heritage Books last month or 2 months ago. So this is a major, and this is the primary resource. So whenever you get primary resources, it's a great thing. So you have the archetype theology, which is the theology of God that God himself possesses. And then you have ectype theology, which is the theology that is revealed by God to man. And the ectype theology would also include our, you know, reflection upon that revelation given by God. And so ectype theology is then broken down into true and false theology. And false theology would basically be natural theology done by the unbeliever without recourse to Scripture, and therefore, you know, affected by the fall, noetic effects of sin, and so forth. So someone like Junius, while he recognizes that there is such a thing as natural theology, unless it's done by the Christian, it's going to be false, under the category of false theology.
Now, if people have taken his archetype-ectype distinction, and that became pretty standard among the tradition, did people follow him on that point as well?
They do up until the later – now, you have Richard Muller schematizes, you know, the development of Reformed, post-Reformation Reformed dogmatics. And after the high point, if you will, the theologians are affected by Cartesian philosophy and Descartes' disciple, German disciple, Christian Wolff. And theologians, as they become influenced by this philosophy, they turn natural theology into an autonomous discipline, which it isn't in Junius, and it wasn't in the Reformed Scholastics prior to, I would say, someone who sticks out in my mind as someone is doing this would be Jean-Alphonse Turretin, which is the son of Francis Turretin. You have that transition. You see that transition amongst Reformed scholastic theologians. So it's not inborn, if you will, to Reformed scholasticism that they would take natural theology and turn it into an autonomous discipline that lays the foundation upon which special revelation or Reformed dogmatics would be built upon. That's a later development that you don't see in Junius himself. So you've got false theology, then you have true theology. And true theology, which is ectypal theology, is broken down into theology of union. That is the theology of Jesus Christ. Then you have, and that takes into account the hypostatic union of the divine and the human natures. And so it distinguishes between the knowledge that the Son of God has as divine and the knowledge that the God-man has as to his human nature. And then there is a theology of vision, that is the theology that angels and the saints have in glory, and that all will have in the new heavens and the new earth. And then there's theology of on the way, or what's sometimes called pilgrim theology, and that's what we possess.
Yeah.
Prior to our going into heaven, or the Lord returns, and we have the consummation of the ages. And so he goes through Franciscus Junius goes into a fair bit of detail explaining each one of those categories. Again, it's going to be an experience not unlike reading Thomas Aquinas. Not exactly the same, because he doesn't do all of the how does Aquinas put it? He puts the state of the question, and then he lists various views, and then he says, and then I say, that kind of thing. You don't have that. You don't have that in Junius, but you have terminology that may not be familiar because it's not the kind of language we use now. Okay, so you're going to have the same experience, even though it's a contemporary translation, so you don't have to deal with like a 19th century translation where they're trying to sound like the King James Bible. any of you who've read the Church Fathers in the standard edition know what I'm talking about. it's going to have language that you'll have to take some time to get to understand, and that's where Richard Muller's little book on the Dictionary of Latin and Greek Theological Terms drawn from the Protestant Scholastics is helpful. But anyways, it's a primary resource, and it's wonderful reading it. At least I think so. And I should mention in passing the publication of two new sets, one of which is in progress, and one which is being printed is a reprint. The one is The Works of John Knox by Banner of Truth.
Yes, that's
a reprint of a complete set. So that has the writings of the Reformer of Scotland. And that's something that has not been available for some time. And then there is the new project of Reformation Heritage Books called the Works of William Perkins. William Perkins was the father of English Puritanism. That will be a 10-volume set. The first volume is due out this next week. Again, Reformation Heritage Books, again, primary resources that help us to, you know, grapple with the history of Reformed dogmatics. Again, our goal is not to, of course, to repristinate, but to benefit from these fathers who have gone before us in the faith. One more book, and that is The Trinity and the Vindication of Christian Paradox, an Interpretation and Refinement of the Theological Apologetic of Cornelius Van Til by B.A. Bosserman. I believe his first name is Brandt. B.A. Bosserman, who is a PCA minister and church planter, or pastor of Trinitas Presbyterian Church in, I believe, the Pacific Northwest, and he's an adjunct professor of philosophy at Northwest University. Has a foreword by Scott Oliphant. You may remember, Camden, that Dr. Oliphant mentioned this book in passing when he spoke at our conference back in October. Basically, he's both explaining Van Til's apologetic, contrasting it or showing how Van Til builds upon Old Princeton, Old Amsterdam, and absolute idealism. That's what the author calls the origins of Van Til's theological apologetic. Then part two is Van Til's Orthodox Trinitarian system. And then he offers a critique. In other words, the looming problem of paradox. And then he offers what he calls an advancement. And it's primarily the advancement is taking Van Til's apologetic beyond looking at the Trinity generically as the solution to the problem of the one and the many, which Bosserman fully agrees with, but he actually will argue in this book for the necessity of the triune nature of God, not merely as one and many, but one and three. And actually, it's quite fascinating, and I think he succeeds. The only drawback I have with the book is he concludes the book with material that frankly shows his indebtedness to federal vision oriented theology.
Really, that comes through.
James Jordan, are you familiar with him? Yeah, he adopts what the best way I can describe it is he adopts the Adam and Eve and Christ maturing model as opposed to the covenant of works, covenant of grace, traditional models. That's not, by the way, necessary for his argument is not affected one way or the other by that, in my opinion. So the book is still very, very much worthwhile. It just unfortunately includes material that I found objectionable or unnecessary, in my opinion. It's published by Wiffenstock, Pickwick Publishers, which is an imprint of Wiffenstock. As I say, it's going to be dense. It's not light reading. Just to warn people. And again, I believe he's persuasive that he does show how the Trinity is not just a one many, but actually a one in three. The necessity of the Trinitarian nature of God, which I think is valuable because it strengthens Van Til's argument.
Mm-hmm. Right. It makes it more specific.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But strengthens it beautifully. So that in that regard, it's an excellent contribution. He does say in the beginning that he depends upon the insights of Lane Tipton. And I can sense that in a lot of what he says. But he does not have, let me make sure I don't say this and live to regret it. But he does not have Lane's dissertation in his bibliography. He has The Function of Perichoresis and Divine Incomprehensibility.
Which was a chapter of his dissertation. It's a modified form.
Okay, so he does have a portion of it. He has De Paul's Christological Interpretation of Creation and Presuppositional Apologetics from Revelation and Reason.
Yep.
And also The Resurrection Proof and Presupposition, Acts 17. His second, article
in the same book, right?
In the same book,
yeah.
So he has material to work with. Not the whole dissertation. Right. But anyways, I think for those of us who are committed to Van Til's apologetic, and let me say, Van Til's theological perspective. I hear a lot of discussion that wants to peg Van Til is an apologist only.
Huh.
And I at some point I'll be making comment about that in published form. It's a way to actually minimize Van Til's influence by simply saying he's only an apologist. This book is helpful in that it shows that Van Til's a theologian, not just a strictly speaking an apologist. So there are many other books that I could talk about, but those are the ones I wanted to bring to the attention of our listeners. There's plenty more coming. We're now in the Christmas season, which means the publishers are issuing books left, right, and center.
And people are going to be receiving them purchasing them.
Right.
With
or getting gift cards.
Exactly.
To Amazon or Barnes & Noble or the Westminster Bookstore or whatever your bookstore is. So be on the lookout for these. I know I've seen friends on Facebook who got the Voss books and they put pictures of them up on Facebook. You may have seen those too, Cam.
Yeah, I saw several. Yeah, we'll definitely have links to all of these books in the episode description so that you can follow up on them and learn more about them if you'd like, as well as finding a place where you might be able to purchase them. So thanks so much for introducing us to these books, Jeff, as well as giving us a picture of them. It's always helpful to hear someone describe them, describe the main arguments, and they can have a better idea of whether or not they ought to purchase them or get them from the library or read them at all.
Right, exactly.
Wonderful. We want to thank everybody for listening. This has been the Reformed Media Review.